I often look to the poet Jan Richardson for sermon readings. This is called The Map You Make Yourself. You have looked at so many doors with longing, wondering if your life lay on the other side. For today, choose the door that opens to the inside. Travel the most ancient way of all, the path that leads you to the center of your life. No map, but the one you make yourself. No provision but what you already carry, and the grace that comes to those who walk the pilgrim's way. Speak this blessing as you set out, and watch how your rhythm slows. The cadence of the road drawing you into the pace that is your own. Eat when hungry. Rest when tired. Listen to your dreaming. Welcome detours as doors deeper in. Pray for protection. Ask for the guidance you need. Offer gladness for the gifts that come, and then let them go. Do not expect to return by the same road. Home is always by another way, and you will know it not by the light that waits for you, but by the star that blazes inside you, telling you where you are is holy, and you are welcome here. So some of you, looking at your order of service, may have rolled your eyes when you saw the sermon title, Heaven, Mapped American Style, because you may not believe in heaven, and certainly not a heaven like Penny read about in Revelation. Three gates, three gates, three gates, three gates, 12 names, 12 names, measured as an angel measures. What in the world does that even mean? But bear with me, because I found the topic of heaven quite interesting after something happened to me on Good Friday. I'll get to that in a minute. I want to read a quote. I am a committed Christian and a complete agnostic about the afterlife. I use agnostic in the precise sense of the word, one who does not know. Moreover, I know that I cannot resolve not knowing by believing. Whether we believe about whatever we believe about an afterlife has nothing to do with whether there is one or not. Marcus Borg. I love that he said, I cannot resolve the not knowing by believing. No matter how hard we believe, we can't make it so. Our belief is not that powerful. But I started, as I said, to think about this subject on Good Friday when I went to an ecumenical service in my hometown. Several ministers from different churches had gathered, and I thought, ooh, this is a chance for me to go to worship rather than leading worship. So I got there, and of course the stage in this pole barn church was filled with lilies and hyacinths, and my sinuses immediately started to clog up. So I thought, the farther back I sit, the safer I am. So I way back I sat. And the first minister got up, and of course all of them were men. And he began by saying, the goal of every Christian is heaven. I have to tell you that I was immediately puzzled and angry, and I got up and practically ran from that sanctuary, muttering to myself, the goal is heaven, not following Jesus, not taking care of my neighbors, not what the Shema says, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. That's not what a Christian's goal is. but it's this pie in the sky measured with an angel's measuring stick place that we don't know for sure exists. Never again will I step foot in that church. Because for me, the goal is to love better every day. Like Horton, to try the impossible, to prop up that tree and sit on that egg, 100% faithful that my love can make a difference in the world. And goodness, we all know today that love is what we all need. We all woke up to horrible news again of a shooting. And I know my love isn't going to fix what happened in Ohio, and it's not going to fix what happened in Texas, but it just might fix what happens here if I keep trying to do it better. So heaven, I went back to the first words of Jesus that were told. He said in the Gospel of Mark, and now I know there was nobody jotting down for the Jerusalem Tribune, all right, Jesus, what are you going to say before you step into the water? But what he had to say was not, ooh, we're going to go off zooming somewhere else. He said, here comes God's kingdom. Doc, here it comes. Open your arms. Here it comes. Get ready. Here it comes. Change your hearts and your lives. Here comes God's kingdom. So what does that even mean? Well, Penny read to us a little bit of what Jesus thought that might mean. The kingdom is like a mustard seed. Tiny, inconsequential, looking like it isn't going to do or be anything. And you bury it in the dirt and it transforms. Huge, weedy, actually, bush that some people might walk by and go, well, that's worthless. Yet birds are nesting in its branches. And animals are lying in the shade underneath. And if it's hot outside and I'm walking by, I can walk on the shady side of that big bush that's a weed and sit down and rest. The kingdom is like that, that seed that transforms in the dark soil to become shelter. I got a hold of a book about heaven by Gary Scott Smith. It's called Heaven in the American Imagination. And I thought, huh, this is interesting. He goes through Americans' history telling us how at different points in time Americans perceived heaven. Not a one time did they perceive it as a mustard seed. The Puritans, rigid, everybody lives just my way, understands the Bible just my way. To them, heaven was a place of higher learning. Gosh, that sounds like a place I want to spend eternity. Not so much. It's well-ordered, tightly knit, people with the same values. People with the strict adherence to biblical norms get to sit at that same table reading all those books forever with me. Ick. Puritans, according to the author, were the group that more than any other systemically excluded people from who was going to get into heaven. A lot of what we know about heaven comes from Revelation, but also from popular culture. Who remembers what Fred and Ginger said heaven was like in Top Hat? Heaven, dancing cheek to cheek. It's a Wonderful Life movie. Heaven Can Wait. Oh God, Bruce Almighty, all of them. wings, halos, clouds, puffy clouds, and we're all just going to be happy. And then Belinda Carlisle, the pop artist, sang a song, "Heaven is a place where love comes first. We'll make heaven a place on earth." I think Belinda was a little closer to what Jesus had to say. The next era in American history that Scott talks about was the Great Awakening, a time of revival. Everybody was going to get Jesus. And Jonathan Edwards, famous preacher, is known for a sermon, "Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God." Yet more of his career was spent preaching about love than about this scary God. He preached a sermon called "Heaven is a World of Love." And for Edwards, he thought the Trinity loved one another and that love was going to spill out and everybody in heaven was just going to love everybody else. Of course, you had to do it his way to get there. The Second Great Awakening brought, though, universalists and free thinkers into the conversation. They claimed that everybody was going to get into heaven. Everybody. So, of course, the Orthodox Christians rose up and went, "Hold it! Not like that." And they started to preach about hell, scaring people into heaven rather than saying love is the way to get there. They also preached that if you are a follower of Jesus, if you are a Christian, you're a stranger here. You don't belong here. You belong there in heaven. So don't worry about here. Throw your trash in the street. Live however you want, not taking care of the earth, because we're all going to go to heaven someday as long as we believe the right things. That thought is what I heard on Good Friday. That the goal is heaven. I don't have to worry about this realm because I don't really belong here. And that isn't what Jesus said. The Victorians talked about heaven as if it was home. And to them, it was the ideal home. Mom, dad, children at their feet, all obedient, dressed, and clean. Yet the reality in Victorian times was that children worked in factories. Homes and cities were filthy. Women were suppressed, oppressed, not listened to, not given a place or a voice other than to be that marker at home that pushed around the mop and kept the children clean. So what kind of heaven is that if heaven is home and my home is crowded and filthy, and I don't have a voice? Not how Jesus talked about it. The Civil War era, where every family knew death, heaven became that place where you would be reunited with loved ones. But for the Southern slave owners, there was a problem with worrying about people's souls. Do all of those people of color working for me have a soul? Am I supposed to worry about them getting saved? But if I get them saved, they sing their nice spirituals and it seems to calm them down. So maybe it's worth it. Boy, as Americans, we're not really very, very kind. The 30 years between 1890 and 1920 saw a division. Social justice gospel started to be preached. People started to understand that what Jesus was saying about living out that love was how we're supposed to be with one another. But the fundamentalists on the other side were more worried, again, about getting to heaven. That's where that big rift between evangelical fundamentalism and more progressive theology started to happen. Billy Graham didn't help it any when he tried to scare everybody into heaven. If you came weeping to the altar, you got the golden ticket. But you had to do it right, and you had to say the right words. For those of you who grew up in that kind of a church, you know it's called the Sinner's Prayer. And I can tell it to you, because I prayed it over and over again, sure that it didn't stick the first time. That's how much scare tactic was used, still is used. And for them, heaven is an endless worship. There are Sundays I get up and I don't even want to go to church. Why would I want to do that for eternity? Not my idea. The turbulent 60s, we heard about liberation theology. And they started to tap into the concept that Jesus preached liberation to first century Palestine. He was talking about the marginalized, the underdog, the people not seen. And hey, look around. We have people of color. Women aren't listened to. Queer people aren't listened to. Poor people aren't listened to. And we've got to make sure that they get heard and loved just as they are. Maybe that's what Jesus meant. But on the other side of the coin, we ended up with Westboro Baptist, white supremacist, and the prosperity gospel who jumped up and down and said, "Wait, I'm oppressed too. Look at me, poor me." And the more I believe, Joel Osteen tells me, the richer I'm going to be. Ooh, goody. I don't think that's how it works, because that isn't what Jesus said. He drew a clear picture in those parables when he talked about the seed. And he talked about a few teaspoons of yeast added to flour and water and sugar, and you get bread, the stuff of life. So what might we be as yeast, adding to the stuff of life? Compassion, acceptance, a desire to work for the oppressed, to stand up, as David said, get on board, stand up, stand out, speak up. Is that the yeast of God's kingdom that Jesus talked about? Pearls dug up in the dirt, a net that gathers all the fish in. Not a city that's 1,500 miles high and wide and square with 12 gates. It's bigger than that. And it's more down to earth than that. Jesus didn't say it's out there, it's up there. It's here. N.T. Wright, in his book Simply Good News, said the point of the good news changes radically depending on whether you think it means here's how you leave this universe and go somewhere else called heaven, or whether you think it means here's how God is remaking the entire creation and offering you a new bodily life in it. What an offer. Remaking creation, but you get to be a part of it. If heaven is out there, up there somewhere, then Jesus had it all wrong. And I don't think he did. He started his ministry with saying, "Here comes God's kingdom. Transform your lives. Change who you are, how you live. Be courageous. Be like yeast and seeds and nets." I want to share one more quote, this time from somebody you know, me. In 2017, I said this in a sermon. "Looking toward heaven does not mean looking up. I think it means looking into the not yet, where Jesus is, where we can be, where we can invite others to be too." That heaven, that place where Jesus is, we're called to co-create that every single day, being seeds and yeast, being brave. Like I said, Belinda Carlisle got it right. Heaven is a place where love comes first. And if you're acting out of love, you're not going to get it wrong. From Jan Richardson's poem that I read, do not expect to return by the same road. Be transformed. Home is always by another way. You will know it not by the light that waits for you, but the star, the kingdom that blazes within each and every one of you, telling you, you are holy. You are holy. And all are welcome. Where you are, who you are, is already holy. And it's just waiting for you to invite others in. The kingdom of heaven is indeed like seeds and yeast, ordinary things that make love grow. Amen.